Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island.
They've attacked us, sabotaged us, abducted us, murdered us. We're not the only people on this island, and we all know it.
So I guess I'm out of the book club.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see in another life, brother. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back.
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. I'm looking once again at expose. That's the wrong notes. Sweet. All right, cool. Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 3, Episode 15, Left Behind. It's a Kate episode, and when you are helping Kate with her scam, what do you intentionally spill on a diner waitress? Because chili seems a little hot, my name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm going to go with a cold borscht, because it's still beet-based, so you still got to clean it up.
My name is Jenna Robinson. I will also go with a chilled soup option. I will go with a frosty bowl of gazpacho.
And I'm Neil Miller. And yes, I'm also going with something that is cold. I'm going with a pistachio milkshake because in my mind, a pistachio milkshake is also green. And I just think that would be funny.
It would be funny. It'd be very mid-90s Nickelodeon of you.
Yeah.
Which is the best, usually. Anyway, not important. Because this is a podcast about Lost. You're listening to the Storm of Lost Rewatch podcast. The word rewatch is in there, which means some of us have watched all six seasons of the television show Lost that aired over a decade ago. And some of you might be joining us for the first time. We split the podcast into two sections just so you don't get spoiled in case this is your first experience with Lost. The first section is called The Calm, and it leads off here. We will only be discussing episodes we've watched for this project already, so that's anything from season one, anything from season two, and everything up through season three, episode 15, Left Behind, this week's episode. Then we will have a short break, followed by The Storm, which is a section for us to discuss this episode of Lost in the greater context of all of Lost. If you've seen all of Lost or don't care about being spoiled, that section is safe for you. If you look down at your podcasting device that is playing this podcast right now, you will see some time codes signaling you where both of these sections begin, so you could choose how much spoiler you want in your storm. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, first of all. Even if this is your first episode, if you've been with us all three seasons, you could support us at patreon.com/stormofspoilers if you want to extra support us besides just listening. There you could subscribe for a monthly subscription fee. There are different levels at different dollar amounts that give you different bonus contents. It's all laid out there, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. You get bonus podcasts. You get to watch along with us in our Slack, where Neil's been leading us through Black Sails. You get to watch a movie with us once a month, also live in our Slack. All of these things, great quarantine bonus content as well.
What movie are we watching this month, Dave?
We're watching Clue. It's a movie based on a board game. That is probably the best example of that type of movie. It's a screwball comedy that has Tim Curry in it, mm-hmm. which is also fantastic. And then also, I think at some point at Black Sails, we're going to do Muppet Treasure Island. So Tim Curry is having a moment.
You're gonna have to outvote me on Muppet Treasure Island. But you can, because you have a majority, so...
I think we're just going to do it, like, as part of the Black Sails watch.
Yeah, we're going to do it on the last... After Black Sails, we're watching...
Awesome.
I think it's, like, Labor Day weekend as well, so it's going to work out really well.
So if you want to be part of the Tim Curry revival, make sure you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers and sign up there. If you sign up at our $10 level, you get access to a new returning podcast. Joanna, what's up with Gen Pop?
Gen Pop.
I remember Gen Pop.
Gen Pop is a general pop culture podcast that I used to host with David Chen. Dave and I worked together on shows like Cast of Kings or Decoding Westworld or The Ones Who Knock. But Gen Pop was like a sort of just like a broader thing. And so we've decided to sort of resurrect it as a joint Patreon perk, where if you subscribe to Dave Chen's new Patreon at the $10 level, you can listen to it there. Or if you subscribe to our Patreon at the $10 level, you can listen to it there. And basically, we're just going to pick some things we're interested in and occasionally have chats about them. So we're doing a couple episodes around the HBO series Lovecraft Country. The first episode is up already. And we'll be back again to talk a mid-season and then again for the finale. And speaking of Lovecraft Country, if you are a member of our Patreon-supported Slack community, we are reading Lovecraft Country in our book club. So it's just sort of like we're got our fingers in a lot of things right now, but Lovecraft Country is where it's at. There's also like a channel where people are doing live watches and stuff like that. If you like live watching shows with like-minded TV nerds, I cannot recommend our Slack enough for that. They do it all the time. It's great. So that is patreon.com/stormofspoilers. That's not the only way you can hang out with us, though. Obviously, you can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter @stormpodcast, where you can vote on our weekly Kistery poll, or you can follow our sort of schedule and all of that over on our website, stormpodcast.com. Apologies. All right. This is usually the part where I read reviews or spoiler-free emails, but we have neither of those this week. We've got emails in the spoiler section, but we've got no spoiler-free emails. And
wait. This on this podcast that brought you the first news of Byling's quarantine movie, we have no reviews about that. On this podcast where John Locke's father
journalism anymore.
showed up out of nowhere like a few weeks ago after he blew up a submarine. We have no emails about this. This is on this podcast where the smoke monster is back this week. Old clickety clack. We have no emails this week. Guys,
we've got a great spoiler email, but we'll read it later. But other than that, yeah, please get to email in or review, and we would love to hear from you. Oh, also, wait. I have something I can read. Last week, I read an email from our listener, Kate, Split in the Storm and the Calm, and I mentioned that when I was doing the My So-Called Life podcast, Kate used to do haiku reviews of every episode of My So-Called Life. And I just mentioned that on the podcast, and so, like a gemstone, she popped a good old haiku review up on Twitter of Exposé. So she said she's going to do them for, like, she's like, I can't do them for every episode, but I'll do them for some of the biggies. So if you go to @possiblyevenme, which is Kate's Twitter, you can see all of her haiku reviews. But this is the one she wrote for Exposé. If you're looking for a catchphrase, razzle dazzle, surely can't be beat. So that's the haiku review of Exposé.
So much truth.
And that's Kate. So that's @possiblyevenme. Hey, Neil Miller.
Yes.
What happened on Lost this week?
Well, in this episode, Left Behind was directed by Karen Gaviola. We'll get to her in a second. It was written by Damon Lindelof and Elizabeth Sarnoff. It aired on April 4th, 2007, and it takes place on days 81 and 82 on the Island of Mystery. In flashbacks, Kate hangs out with Cassidy, who we've met before, right? In Iowa. Together, they pull a talk to Kate's mom con, but it doesn't end happily for really anyone, except for the friendship that Kate and Cassidy obviously have. At the other's village, back on the island, John shows up long enough to just leave, and he leaves Kate behind. Then the others leave Juliet behind, literally handcuffed to Kate. Together, they overcome a dislocated shoulder, the very muddy jungle, a pair of handcuffs, and old clickety-clack, not once, but twice. And yet, some trust issues remain. On the beach, Hurley informs Sawyer that he's about to be voted out of the camp because he was extremely himself during the Nikki and Paolo incident. The good news is that Sawyer spends a day being nice and planning a boar cookout. The bad news is Sawyer got conned into being nice. Hurley is happy. Everyone is impressed. Well, except for Sun. She's still understandably upset with Sawyer. The whole thing ends with Kate and Juliet making it back to Otherton to reunite with Jack and Saeed and become a power quadrangle. Now it's time to go back, and Juliet is coming home to meet the crew, but rest assured, not everyone is on board with this plan. A fun fact, well, mostly just a fact about this episode. This is the second episode directed by Karen Gaviola, her first being Season 2, Episode 16, The Whole Truth. She is the only woman director to direct more than one episode of Lost, and this is her last one. So, you know.
Total of two.
Like I said, more of just a fact than a fun fact. This week's calm question, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being very chill and 5 being the little angry guy from Pixar's Inside
Out.
God, why did I write up there?
Because that's an interesting movie that I would see where, like,
I would cry.
The joy part of my emotion and the sadness part of my emotion got married at the beginning of the quarantine. And then slowly, over a wordless montage, joy dies off. And sadness has to travel to a place where it's beyond news. That, you know, that joy always wanted to go to, and that's transcending out of my physical body into the internet, where no one has to eat, where I don't have to read any news I don't want, where I have access to all the world's media. That sounds real nice. And the plot of the Johnny Depp movie, Transcendence.
If you're just joining us, Dave loves something and he hates something. He loves talking about the movie Transcendence starring Johnny Depp. He brings it up all the time. He hates eating. So over here, Dave wistfully talk about a future where you don't have to eat. That's our Dave. That's on brand for him.
Anyway, I also interrupted Neil, who was about to ask us a question.
No worries. Thank you for helping me correct the record on which Pixar movie I was referencing. Anyway, if you were Kate... How mad are you that Juliet didn't tell you about the handcuff key on a scale of 1 to 5? I think I'm like a 4 at that point with Juliet. I'm pretty pissed off about the key thing. Joanna, if Juliet betrayed your trust, would you forgive her?
Oh, I'd forgive her because she just like blinked those baby blues at me, but I would have been helped by the fact that I already dislocated her shoulder. So I'd be like, well... At least that's I got true. To dislocate a shoulder.
Everyone had kind of a rough time. Dave, how mad are you at Juliet?
I'm gonna say mad. I'm gonna say 3 because coming along with the realization that she lied about the key also comes a great amount of wariness that what little empathy I had felt towards her in the previous situation could have also been based on a lie. So it seems like in that exact moment, if I were Kate, I would be 3, but on the inside plotting my revenge.
Nice. All right. Well, you know, it's good to start with a little revenge then.
Good to start with a little revenge.
I mean, I wouldn't trust her. That's what I wouldn't.
For sure. Yeah, and I definitely think that's the vibe we're getting from both Kate and Saeed, who is, as we know, very good.
Very good.
He's very good.
Joanna,
we're
who missed
some not trustworthy vibes.
Missed her bot's debut in the closing moments of this show in the live watch when Saeed finally pops up and someone typed his name. And he's Slack. Very good, came
in
back with
Slack.
A Slack bot.
If you're in our Patreon Slack, there's a thing in Slack where there's like a chat bot that does like can do be programmed with automatic responses. And we were watching Black Sails, I think it was, and Dave was like, Joanna, or like, good thing we don't have a Slack bot about Saeed. I swear to God, you said that. Like, I wouldn't have thought of it on my own. You're the one who created this. So then I went and made a Slack bot. So anytime someone types Saeed, I might be modifying it to make it a more specific Saeed phrase. But right now, as of right now, in our Slack, if you type the word Saeed, the response you get is, he's very good. And I ran a poll to ask people if it was annoying, and only 2 people said it was annoying, and everyone else said they liked it. So, you know.
Well, that's how good Saeed is.
I mean, it was the star of the show at the end of this episode.
Because he pops up and everyone was like, oh man, look at this. Suddenly I don't have so many questions about where Locke went because this Slack bot was going off. But I do want to get back to the episode and start where we kind of like to with the flashback, which I like, but would like if they pulled a different non-Kate's mom related con even more, I think. I know that at least for the Calmies, this all builds to a big reveal about Cassidy being pregnant with
that's not a big reveal. Like, what I like about the flashback is that both this interlude with Cassidy and Kate takes place both before Kate goes to visit her mom in the hospital, so we finally really can connect the dots between, you know, the last time we saw Diane in a flash, you know, like, we know the warning that she gave Kate and all that sort of stuff like that. And then this happens before Cassidy goes to prison and tells Sawyer that she's pregnant. Like, we already saw that happen. So it's just like a nice fleshing. I love this flashback. It's one of my favorites, and I think it's definitely my favorite Kate flashback. And it, I think it really fleshes those other moments. It just like imbues those other moments with like more significance, you know.
I like everything that's between Kate and Cassidy. I just don't necessarily agree with the mom point. Like, when this episode starts and they recognize each other as two people, you know, avoiding the law and living by their own terms, I did need it to pivot back to Kate's mom as much. I think that I see where that came from, because we're centering around our main characters. When they get a flashback episode, we do have X amount of runway that we already kind of know about with Kate that we could play with. That being said, I think it just would have been fun to see like a different con, and it might have worked a little bit better in parallel with Juliet.
I disagree again, because I think that the whole thing, the parallel is beyond Kate and Juliet. I think this is actually one of the most parallel flashbacks with On Island, because it actually runs in parallel to like what happens with Jack and Kate, because, you know, Kate came back to rescue Jack, but actually like messed things up for him and really damaged their relationship. And that's the revelation she has in this conversation with her mom. Like, I was helping you. He was an abusive husband. I was helping you. And Diane's like, that's not help I wanted or asked for. And our relationship is forever done. And I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, we've been talking a lot about the episodes where the flashback and the On Island stuff really mesh well together, and we're in a really good zone of them right now. This is not one of the episodes that I would have picked off of a list of favorites heading into the rewatch, you know, given having only watched it one time. This works super well. And this to me feels like one of the better mixes. And I get what Dave's saying about, like, it would be really fun to go to see Kate and Cassidy do anything, any kind of heist or con, or maybe they could be pirates too. I'm not sure. I do think this one works, because it layers in a couple of different, like, it layers in more about Kate in multiple ways that feel relative to the episode, you know, so the stuff about her mom, and then, you know, just the way that the experience with Cassidy, sort of them meeting by chance and deciding to help each other out, sort of parallels with Juliet as well. So I think it's just, this is one of the better ones.
Yeah, it's really tight. I agree with you. It's not an episode that you don't think, like, you know, before I hit play on the episode for the rewatch this week, I couldn't have told you what this episode was called. Mm-hmm. I could tell you this is the Kate and Juliet handcuffed in the jungle episode, but I couldn't tell you the title of it. So it's not a title that makes anyone's top 10 list or anything like that, nor do I necessarily think it should. I think it's just a really, really good example of something that lost not being like overly ambitious, which it does sometimes with stuff like Exposé or something like that, and not being boring, but like just hitting the middle right on the head. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I think this episode is. I really like it more every time I watch it.
I guess for me, I like the On Island stuff so much because our A story puts us so directly in Kate's headspace so her revelation can be, you know, what she says to Jack when she finally gets back to him this time, that I guess it felt the flashback, Cassidy even being there, sort of felt like a division of purpose to me, and that I know that I liked Kate and Cassidy, so therefore the other purpose might have been wrong, is how I got there. I don't know. It's just a weird gut feeling, but I guess that's what you guys are arguing, that like it's good to watch, but if you were to like make a list of top 10 episodes, it may or may not be on there. I think that that's a respectable thing, because there is like everything on the island is gold this week for me, from like the chained heat, which is a trope we looked up before we started the podcast so I could name it correctly. According to TVTropes.com, chained heat is when two characters of like opposite goals are handcuffed together. I like that trope. It's super mysterious. I like what the stuff in the jungle does for both Kate and Juliet's characters at this point. And then the stuff on the beach with Sawyer and Hurley, which we'll get to later, is also equally as great. But
yeah, and well, once again, that's just like really solid work. Like, so we've had a few beach, they're like a few, meanwhile, back on the beach, C plots this season, right?
Right.
And, you know, like, Charlie's gonna die, or like,
well, that one's still going on.
Sawyer, well, like, the really specific one, or like, Sawyer, you know, needs to win at ping pong, or like, whatever, you know, they're just trying to figure out, like, what to do so that we're not like, ugh, as we cut back to the beach sort of thing, right? And like, they'd be in trouble if Sawyer and Hurley were not at the beach, I think, given the cast of characters that are left there. As Hurley points out, they're like, he's like, the A team's out in the jungle. It's just us here, but the Kwans are here, but, you know, they're fishing, so I don't know what to tell you. But
we can't let Jin talk, or we have to pay Daniel Day Kim a little bit more again.
But I just think that, that's just, this is a really, 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 really good example of like, okay, they've got nothing to do with the main plot, but let's make people smile every time they cut back to the beach. It's Sawyer gutting a fish. It's Sawyer, like, you know, hunting with Desmond. It's Sawyer talking to Claire. It's Sawyer talking to Charlie. Like, it just, and it's like sun's death glares. It's great. Great stuff. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, well, it's just solid. It just feels solid.
Yeah.
You know?
And also, if we think about the way this episode ends, the sort of on the beach, Hurley has identified that they need leadership and they kind of need that to be Sawyer. And on the other side of the island, Jack is making a decision on his own that is some leadership stuff that is not going well. So now we're seeing like these two things that could intersect again in fun new ways with the injection of Juliet. So I think that like there's an exciting momentum even within this episode toward like, oh, I do, you know, on top of like, where the hell did John go? It's just like, okay, well, like assuming nothing goes weird by the time they get back to the camp, what happens when they get back to the camp, you know, and everybody's like cool with Sawyer now. It's just going to be great. I'm excited. The possibilities that this episode opens up for Lost are sort of just as good as some of the stuff that we get in this episode.
Well, I also think that like what I do appreciate is that Sun is not completely convinced of Sawyer's non-villainy.
And love it's that
like,
shot.
Yeah, it's so good, and it's like, you know, steal a baby, fine. Mm-hmm. Kidnap Son, you're going to be in trouble for a while. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be as easy back for you as it is for Charlie.
You're not going to be able to just hold Aaron while Claire eats to impress Son, okay? You put a bag over her head. You dragged her into the jungle. You convinced Charlie. I mean, and I do kind of like that out of all of that, Sawyer is the one who's really getting the full blame.
She knows that Sawyer came up with the plan. Oh, she knows that Charlie didn't come up with that plan. Yeah. Not that he should like get off scot-free or anything like that.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
Well, and I think it's important for any future snitches out there. It's not something I recommend, but the person who apologizes first occasionally gets a little bit more leeway. And Charlie stepped up and apologized first.
You heard it here first. Dave is pro snitching.
I specifically disclaimed that I was not pro snitching.
You just have to be the first one.
I'm just saying, if you're going to, yeah, be smart about it. It's like, that's my advice for any sort of breaking the law too. Like, you know, if you break the law, if you could get away with it, just, you know, once you get caught, don't break the law.
Another incredible layered element of this episode is that there's a con happening everywhere you look, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because even Hurley is conning Sawyer, you know? So
they threw in all the cons.
It's the lamest con, according to Sawyer.
The Kate thing is interesting because we've complained a bit about on this show about, like, how Kate becomes absorbed in the context of a love triangle, and you miss sort of some of the earlier stuff that didn't have her so centered on this one question. Mm-hmm. And the love triangle isn't absent from this episode, obviously. Like, Juliet's bringing it up. They've, like, you know, we've got sort of a love quadrangle going on because Juliet has entered the chat, you know, sort of thing. So all of that is happening. But at the same time, it's like, Kate and Juliet and all of their screen time together, and Kate and Cassidy and all of their screen time together. Once again, the boys aren't absent from that because Cassidy, of course, has to talk about how she's still in love with Sawyer despite him being terrible to her, basically. But, like, there's just so much good, as one of our listeners put it, like, girl gang energy in this episode that Kate, as a character, really needed. Because, like, I did, like, I'm still so annoyed that Nathan Fillion episode even exists. Because, like, why? And who cares? And what does it mean? Nothing. You know what I mean?
It could have been Cassidy.
It could have been Cassidy. She could have married Cassidy. So,
she was just trying to sell Bibles.
So, yeah. By the way, what was Cassidy doing? That is I have seen movies and films. That is a two-person con job. And she's trying to run it by herself. Needed Kate. You can't run that con without a second person to buy the bad chain. So, you know, I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. I've seen The Grifters. I know how this works.
I've seen the previous episode of Lost where she learned that con. can't sneak it by us. I want to talk about old clickety-clack for a moment because there's a question that was asked by many people. Very cool. Juliet reveals a key. Gets across the sonic fence line, turns it back on, manages to apparently save them from the smoke monster. But, question, can this monster fly upwards? Joanna, break it down.
Well, basically, we see Juliet turns the fence on just in time, Kate runs through the barrier just in time, and then the smoke monster in like three sections comes out of the jungle, converges into one inky cloud, and then sort of slams itself up against this invisible barrier like a, I don't know, an octopus against a aquarium glass wall. Do they do that? They don't do that. Anyway, and it looks really cool. But the question is, if Kate Austin a few episodes ago can clamber up a tree branch and hop over a pylon, implying that the whatever sonic defense that is enacted that fence only goes as high as the pylons, then why can't the smoke monster, who we've seen go very high indeed, fly up over the fence and have its way with the others?
Yeah, we've seen it like explode out of the ground directly upwards, and we've seen it become like a tiny little wisp of black smoke. And recently, spiders. Why can't it do something, become something that gets through the sonic fence?
Why can't it spider its way over that fence, you know? Yeah, so that's the question. I don't think they would have a good answer if you asked them.
No, and I don't think we'll be coming across one.
No.
So we want to leave that there as a question.
I just think that it had... Okay, here's my theory. The old clickety-clack, our friend from the jungle, doesn't go by this fence a lot and did not have a Mikhail to push through the fence. So really doesn't understand how the mechanics of it work. So Juliet used the element of surprise like you would like a puppy in a screen door sort of thing. So it's not that the clickety-clack can't fly over. It's just that it hasn't come to that solution yet.
That gives it like a thinking brain. Maybe it's like, well, it's again, been just, co- I, it's been I coded to do it to something a puppy. Like it's been like coded to judge people on the island and, you know, flash their memories and kill the bad ones or whatever the other.
Yeah, I mean,
to
I
do.
Guess that's the thing. That's a good question for season three of Lost so far. Is like, do you think that the clickety clack is sentient or is it some kind of mechanical? It sounds mechanical. This was the question of the time.
Yeah, because it could be like a if then statement where it's like, you know, if attacking then no up or something like that, and it would just sure. never be able to.
Okay, I just don't think that I don't think we should ever accuse a smoke monster of being that like stupid or puppy like because here's the deal. Here's
that's
what
true.
I,
it has done some stuff that seem intelligent.
Here's something that I love about this episode. Juliet's shoulder disc gets dislocated. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of stuff happens, and she still doesn't take off the cuffs. And it's and so, like, the fact that she is so freaked out by the smoke monster coming their way that she takes... Then she reveals, like, that she's got the key. That makes the smoke monster so much scarier. Because, mm-hmm. like, she's willing to endure a dislocated shoulder or whatever it is to keep her con going. But in the face of the smoke monster, this chick is like, no, no.
Do you think she was scanned by the smoke monster with the white flashes in their first encounter?
I don't really understand what being scanned means by the smoke monster.
Well, so it's what like your... what he did to Echo or no, what I mean, he did to John Locke.
I don't mean I don't understand the question you're asking me. I mean, I don't know what that process means. You know, being scanned by the smoke monster.
Well, I think it would.
Sometimes the smoke monster shows up, it takes your picture, and it runs away.
Yeah.
The paparazzi.
Right? It's like the paparazzi of the island. This is why Juliet, because she's lived inside the fence for the most part. So
and Juliet's like, no, my wet jungle hair. I wasn't ready for a photo.
Yeah.
My arm is out of the socket. Do not take a photo of me right now.
No.
I think it's more that because I don't think we've seen the monster double scan anybody as of yet, so it would be like Neil saying maybe Juliet, not that she doesn't know what it is. I think that's obviously a lie when she and Kate are in amongst the trees, but it is possible it's the first time they've encountered each other this close. Yeah. Directly.
I think it's I don't know what the others like onboarding process is like for like when Juliet got there. We haven't really seen a whole lot of that yet, but I imagine there is an explanation of what not only what the fence does, but here's like the code.
Yeah.
Turn it on and off.
A little pamphlet why, with illustrations.
You know, I guess if there's anything this episode teaches us about the smoke monster, it's that this fence is there for the smoke monster. like that might be why that fence is there, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's entirely possible Juliet has never actually seen it before or come across it. It's
she
just maybe
seemed,
a story.
She seemed really scared, but at the same time, like Juliet was doing a great job pretending this whole episode. So
I think how much we could trust Juliet is still an open question with good arguments on both sides at this point. Because she spent a lot of time around Ben. Not saying that she's aligned with Ben, but maybe she's learned some Ben-ness.
She's also had to exist with Ben, which would require a flexibility of character morality.
but this is also like, I mean, I don't trust her in terms of like, I don't know what this specific con is called, but it's the one that Ana Lucia pulled when she first met the Losties, which is like to pretend to be a prisoner as well. So, like, I don't know what that con is called, but it happens all the time. And so much so that something happened. We're watching Black Sails. Something happened in Black Sails where our, like, protagonist met someone in a cell. And I'm like, I don't trust a lone person in a cell. They could be running an Ana Lucia, right? I'm just going to call it the Ana Lucia. They could be running an Ana Lucia right now. So, like,
it is called, according to TVTropes.com, the Trojan Prisoner.
Ah, perfect.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So did Juliet lie about being handcuffed to Kate in the jungle? Yes, she admits to that in this episode. But is she lying about being left behind by the others?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is she the Trojan prisoner? That's certainly what Saeed thinks. And I don't know if you know this, but Saeed?
He's very good.
He's very good.
Very good.
And Jack automatically thinks that she's safe, which also sounds like a Jack judgment. He's made his judgment.
We have exchanged looks over the open back of Ben Linus. We are bonded. We are. She would never do that to me.
Which is interesting since, well, I guess not interesting, but Kate had seen Juliet shoot a guy to save her and Sawyer at one point, so I don't know. Juliet goes, maybe we'll learn more about her pretty soon.
No, I was reading an interview with Damon and Carlton between the the first six block and this one, and I think it was with Media Village, which is just like NBC Universal's thing. Anyway, whatever. Where they were talking about the balance of this season and the way in which they had to, like, yes, there are certain characters like Sun and Claire and et cetera who are getting a little sidelined because they want to build up the others in Ben and Juliet. So they are devoting time to Ben and Juliet because, like, in Damon and Carlton's view, this season 3 is the others versus our castaways, right? And so they need to make the others be something. And they said that, like, one of the responses they got to Juliet in those first six episodes is people loved her allegiance ambiguity. They love not knowing whose side she's on. And that's what this episode is all about. You don't know, even when all is said and done, we still don't know whose side Juliet is on. And that's sort of like her whole thing.
She just gives us that one look. That one look that means so many things.
Nice.
All right, did we miss anything on the conning Sawyer on the other side of the island? Because it was enjoyable. But
that, I love that it's Hurley. I love that it's a Hurley con. Hurley cons are the best cons. And yeah, I mean, other than the hair situation that Sawyer's trying to pull off.
Oh my god, redneck
that one's
samurai.
Rough, right?
No, it's good. It's so good. Redneck okay. Samurai, it's great.
Where does this rank like so far on Sawyer looks? Is this number two?
Okay. No, it's number two, because number one forever. Well, for now. Is Raff Sawyer, because he had this look, this hair look, plus glasses. The best Sawyer look by far. but this is a really close redneck samurai, hunting boar, feeding the camp. That's,
and I love
that's
that
number two.
It seems the most like mid South thing, because I've been to like Tennessee, Kentucky, sort of the part where we expect Sawyer. Right, he's from Tennessee.
I think so.
What?
I think so.
Is that he threw a barbecue. Like, that was his idea of, like, oh, I need to do something nice. And, like, the best idea.
It's also very Hawaii, right?
Like, that's true.
We're going to roast a pig and here's some pineapple.
Just hand the full seeded pineapple right of the baby.
But I did. But when he was, like, basting the pig with the Dharma beer, that does feel very, Southern to me. So, yeah.
But he's from Alabama. Good for Sawyer.
He's from Jasper, Alabama. So.
Oh, right.
Oh, but he was living in Knoxville, Tennessee, and his parents died. So, you know what? Tenabama.
That's in the same.
General South.
Tenabama.
All right.
I bet Sawyer has made beer butt chicken. That's what I bet. I mean, I've also made beer butt chicken, but, you know, I'm just saying. Have you guys made beer butt chicken?
I don't even think I know what that is.
No, what's the second word you're saying? Butt?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, you guys. Okay. You take a chicken. Apologize to vegetarians and vegans. Please skip ahead. You take a chicken carcass, and either in the barbecue or in the oven, you open a can of beer. You pour out like a third of it, and then you put like maybe some like paprika or some butter in there as well. And then you stick it open up the chicken's butt, and you like balance the chicken so it's sort of like seated on the beer can. And then you roast it sort of like sitting upright, but it's got the beer can inside of it. And so it's like distributing moisture, steaming basically the chicken from the inside. It's really, I learned how to make it in college.
Wow.
It's really good. They sell. And then if you want to be like super extra about it, which I would never want to be, because the whole like part of the fun of beer butt chicken is that it's tricksy to balance the chicken. So you have to like make sure your chicken is sitting comfortably, before you put it on the barbecue or put it in the oven. But, if you want to cheat, I'm sure you go to like Target or whatever. They sell like racks basically that have like a little holder for the beer and then like a place to sort of like secure the chicken. But that's cheating, I think. I think you need to do the balancing act. So yeah, beer butt chicken.
Learn something new every day.
Aren't you glad?
I'm going to be Googling this because I have questions, but this is a lost podcast.
All right.
I just like, can you taste the beer? Is there a type of, we'll get there later. Let's do some corners. Neil, do we have a Giacchino corner this week?
Oh, we got two good ones. We have two. the first one is Storming Monster, which, okay, I appreciate that. The second one is the good one. It's Heart of Thoyer.
Yeah.
With the TH instead of an S.
So it says thaw because his heart's thawing. It's great.
I think we were discussing before we started recording that this is one of those that works exceptionally well on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Like reading it works better. But specifically than saying on paper. It.
Heart of Thoyer.
I was pointing out that thaw and Sawyer have two different vowel sounds, so it doesn't work super well unless you want to get all like, super, super tenabandum about it and say Sawyer.
Yeah, twang it. Thawyer.
Thawyer.
That's what I assure you that's how Giacchino said it.
I hope so.
When they planned this.
Our jungle of mystery moment this week, where'd Locke and the others go? They left no trail. They left Jack face down, gassed in his hallway.
John did not respond positively or negatively to the question, are you brainwashed? He just sort of moved on.
That's true. Just moved on. And he's got a weird bandage on his hand that I don't think was there last time we saw him. Where'd Locke the others go? Who knows? I bet we never return to it, though. It's going to be a mystery forever.
It's too bad.
The Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to both Juliet and Kate for falling in the male gaze mud. Splat, right before they hit a sonic fence. That's just my favorite fall.
Just right into the mud.
It could have been maybe Cassidy falling backwards with her Bible thing. That's not as fun. Juliet and Kate share a ward. Joanna, we're bringing a corner back this week that we've forgot last week, I think. Maybe for the past couple of weeks.
Well, basically, this is the Desmond button corner. And, like, when Desmond shows up with his standard blue shirt with only, like, 2 to 3 buttons at the bottom, like, we've been there. We've seen that. That's the default. So, really, we only need to observe when it's, like, off the
neck. Ah, yes.
And, like, last week he was wearing the wrong shirt as well. Like, the last time we saw him, he was not wearing the blue shirt. And I should have talked about it, but I didn't. But this week it's pretty, I think you will all agree, exceptionally bad. Because he's wearing not the blue shirt, and whatever he's wearing, it's like a workman's shirt. It's buttoned all the way up. Like nary a clavicle, a pec, the curve of an upper ab. Like all of that light is hiding under the bushel of this shirt. So Neil and I were trying to determine for ourselves whether or not that is a bad, like, should we be worried, like, Desmond buttoned up tight, red blood will be spilt this night, like what is
does
this?
It mean does everyone's mean? About to get food poisoning from the boar that Sawyer just cooked? Yeah. Like, is it that serious, or
is it a good sign, like,
is he relaxed? Tell. Yeah,
I think it's a bad sign. I think when we can't see Desmond's gleaming torso, it means something bad is about to
happen.
It's
like it represents Desmond's anxiety. So it's like as buttoned up it is how worried he is about when Charlie's gonna die. You know? If it's way open, he's fully in the I just gotta save Charlie right now moment. But he's fully buttoned up means he's being vigilant and taking this seriously.
Can I insert here the pop quiz that I've come up with for
yes
this thing. It's not what would you rather eat, Kate's mom's apron soup or Kate's floor witch that she eats that's been on the floor for a couple days, it seems. That's not the quiz. The pop quiz is this. And the answer is subjective because I haven't done full research on this, but when you think Kristen Shepherd, we're going to leave him out of it. Which character that you think of as a flashback character do you think appears in the most episodes?
Hmm.
Ethan.
Oh. I mean, I I think I know. Is it somebody in this episode?
Yes.
Oh, damn it.
Then I know who it is.
Who is it?
It's the agent. It's the marshal.
Marshal.
Frederick.
Yeah. Mars, isn't he?
Oh, he went.
Edward
oh,
Mars.
Well, he's on the. He's buried on the island.
It. This is why I phrased that you think of as a flashback character.
Because
yes, I know he was on the flight, and I know he lands on the beach. But when you think of him, he's a flashback character.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
He dies within like three episodes.
People can come up with different nominees if they want, if they have other better ideas. But he shows up in 12 episodes of Lost. Christian Shepherd is only in 19 episodes of Lost. So, you know, it's not like a huge gulf between the two. But Edward Mars. I was looking at Sarah. Sarah's much lower. But the marshal just keeps showing up, man.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get his man. He's Tommy Lee Jones. He's not.
I like that in this one,
go.
He only shows up for like 10 seconds as well. Like this one is not about him, but he's still
No. But he's there. It's like, oh, I got to check for it. I also like that this episode opens and I'm like, this episode opened and my first note was like, what is Kate wearing? And the truth is Kate is wearing something that we could maybe confuse Cassidy for her in later. That I was like, what's with the hat and the hair and everything? It's like very, it's very odd. And I was like, oh, it's so that, you know, later we're.
But yeah. the wig's okay.
The wig's great. Yeah, we did want to talk about the Kate wig because it's the best wig anyone has ever worn in a Kate episode. that's a low bar, but she cleared it. And like my assumption that I was talking to the guys about before we started recording is that they have maybe several Kate wigs around, Evangeline Lilly wigs around for various stunt women to wear. So they didn't have to like be like, is this what blonde hair looks like? I'm not sure. Yeah. Let's
we don't have any examples.
Let's just guess.
Can we reuse the Boone wig somehow? Wigs are expensive.
Oh, maybe that's what they used to give Jack his like baby bangs that he had in that one flashback.
Speaking of Kate and Cassidy, they are going to split the Henry Gale Memorial Obviously a Lie Award. Kate, for every time she was calling herself unconvincingly Lucy, who's a saint, but Kate's not a saint. And Cassidy, who says, I'm just selling Bibles to the marshal. Which we know she's not. We know both those things are. It's hard to pick a Henry Gale Memorial Obviously a Lie Award in an episode where everybody's part of a con. So that's what we learned this week on Lost. Joanna, the jungle of Kistery last week involved two of the most reviled characters from Lost fandom. How'd it turn out?
Are you talking about Boone and Arse?
I am. Everybody hates them.
Yeah, so for Exposé, our Jungle of Kistery poll, this is where we vote on the two characters who should or did smooch or maybe also inanimate objects. Our nominees, in order of votes, ascending order, Arts and the Spiders only got 15% of the vote. This is a really, really close poll this week. Arts and the Spiders only got 15% of the vote. Paolo and Boone got 27.3%. Sun's Punch and Sawyer's Kisser, our text sort of might have gotten in the way of that one getting more points, but, cause it cut off a little bit, but Sun's Punch and Sawyer's Kisser, or Sawyer's Mouth, 27.3% of the vote, but, just eking out a win. And they needed a win because they were buried alive. It's Nikki, it's Paolo, and it's Spiders. So the thruple of Nikki and Paolo and Spiders, 29.9% of the vote. And then this week we are voting for, and usually I go ahead and name which listeners nominated Kistery. We will come back to that. I have not abandoned that, but I didn't join the live watch this week. I did scroll through over the weekend and see some of your nominations. So we've put this together from the best of our recollection, and I think we nailed it. We've got Diane and the Chili.
Yeah, we've got
Cassidy dressed as Kate and Kate dressed as Kate, right? Together.
Yeah.
We've got Kate and Juliet Dry, obviously. But the one that I'm putting all my money on to win is Kate and Juliet Muddy. So, those are your picks for Kistery, and by your, I mean mine. And they will be up on twitter.com, @StormPodcast for you to vote on over the week.
And I will take book club this week because it's not really about a book. It's via Lostopedia. I found this little factoid. Claire is seen reading a book called Rick Romer's Vision of Astrology. And that's because Rick Romer was the name of the set decorator of Lost for previous seasons. And this was the first episode after he left the show. So he gets a nice little tribute. And I guess Claire is reading about astrology. That seems like that seems on brand.
The other book club thing is that Sawyer is reading Watership Down again. So he has looped back through.
He's made it through the entire library.
He really did need a project.
Yeah, I feel bad for Sawyer. He should have been able to like pack up a few of the books before they blew up the hatch, man.
Well, so, wouldn't it be great if Kate snags him from other town before she heads back? Maybe there's still time. Still time to bring Sawyer some books.
That would have been really thoughtful of Kate, but it's not on brand for Kate. I will say, sorry, one other wardrobe thing that I should have mentioned in the Desmond Button check-in is that Evangeline Lilly, you know, we love Evangeline Lilly's arms, and we're happy to see them at all the time. But something I noticed this week is it's not just that she's not wearing a sleeveless shirt. She's wearing a t-shirt with the sleeves, like, pushed up. And I was like, how do they stay pushed up as she's running through the jungle? And then I looked closely and I noticed that they had been tacked, which is just like a sewing term for like, you know, basically like sewing casual kind of pleats in like someone mm-hmm. in the costume department was like, let us augment all of Evangeline's t-shirts so that the sleeves look perma rolled up, and can endure any run through the jungle. So, thank you.
Costume department. Also big fans yeah. of Evangeline Lilly's guns.
Bring it out. All right. Where's Libby? Also, this week folds in with our official podcast check-in. If you remember, Libby left us too early, and so we'd like to pretend where she is in different flashbacks. Here, I think she'd be directly after we see this flashback play out. Libby meets Cassidy and gets her on prenatal vitamins, because it's never too early to start with the folic acid and whatnot. Development happens early. And that brings us to the official podcast check-in. Lost had an official podcast that was airing along with in between episodes, essentially, and the creators, executive producers, Carlton Cuse, Damon Lindelof, would answer questions about the season. I read Carlton, Neil reads Damon Lindelof. Here's this week's podcast excerpt. Okay, Damon, I've got a question for you, buddy.
Go for it, Carlton.
Any chance we see Libby again this season? I miss her, and it seems like there's so much more backstory to tell with her. All the mysteries surrounding the mental institution and giving Desmond her boat.
Do you think mental institutions are funny?
No, but I'm thinking, like, how much mystery is there surrounding giving Desmond her boat? I mean, we sort of explained, they sat down and had coffee, and she said, take the boat. Do we need to see, although a flashback where she actually signs the deed and title could be very exciting.
She did. She did make a reference to the fact that her husband had died, though. And maybe there's some sort of kind of story to tell there. I would say that you certainly haven't seen the last of Libby. We miss her, too. One of the things that, you know, people always ask us, have you made mistakes on the show or do you have regrets about the show? One of those regrets is that we weren't really able to service Cynthia Watrouse better as an actress. In season two, obviously, there was a lot of grumbling about as joining, you know, as there was this year, that we weren't giving our regulars enough screen time. And with Mr. Echo and Ana Lucia sort of joining, you know, the cast of characters, Libby sort of got short shrift. So we owe those answers, and we have every hope that Cynthia is going to come back and come back to the show and, you know, grace us with her presence again so we can answer them.
Well spoken. And scene. Joanna, any thoughts on that?
Not that I can share here.
Interesting. So in that case, we should move into the storm right after this.
This week's episode of the Storm Podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P. If there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, now is the time to reach out. BetterHelp is a service, an online service that helps you with therapy. And who doesn't need therapy? We need therapy all the time, is my opinion, but like especially right now, right? Okay. A friend of mine started using BetterHelp, you know, about like a month and a half ago or whatever. And she was she's had such a good experience with BetterHelp. She was so bowled over by her experience that she was texting me excitedly. She was like, oh my God, therapy today. Oh my God. And like, send me all these texts about it this last week. And I was so happy to hear someone else having these like enormous breakthroughs in therapy, which is just like, we're all so jammed up right now. It's something we really, really need. And I was just really, really gratified that she was able to find the help she needed. And she was so happy about it that another friend of ours was like, should I try BetterHelp? This is all true. This is all truly happened to me last week. So, we're big fans of BetterHelp here. They will assess your needs, match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. You don't have to take my word for it. You can go to betterhelp.com/reviews, and you can read some of their testimonials that are up there. This is, one I really like left for, a counselor named Whitney. Whitney is by far the best counselor I've had, and I've had a few others throughout my life. I was skeptical at first about it being online, but she has been so helpful. So that, you know, the fact that this therapy is online, so you don't have to like leave the house during a pandemic and go try to find a therapist, is incredibly useful. And also, the friend of mine who I was talking about, from what I've observed from her experience, the flexibility in terms of scheduling is a lot looser with BetterHelp than it is maybe with a standard therapist where you have your like weekly set time and you always meet at that time. Like BetterHelp, I think, is a little bit more flexible around your schedule, whatever madness might be happening in your house in these quarantine times. This is not, you can start communicating with someone in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's a professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, which might not be locally available in many areas. And if you're listening to this around the world, this service is available to you.
They make it super easy to use. You could log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room like with traditional therapy. And also, sitting indoors in a waiting room with other people doesn't sound great to me right now. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
And if that sounds like something you want to do, visit betterhelp.com/storm. That's better, HELP.com/storm, and join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. So if you would like to get 10% off of your first month, go to betterhelp.com/storm and get some help today.
Now is the time on the show when we dance, when we thank our small council Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above. We've got a whole bunch of newbies. Hello. We will start with you. We've got Mitch, Felidia Featherbottom. That's right. Felidia Featherbottom, Heather Todd, Alex Wenkis, Deanna Sorak, Michael Katzen, David Rinna, Frank Parinello, Jack Sinclair, Max Barnhart, Brendan Schneider, Rochelle Leopard, Yossi Goffman, Jorge Dargents, Emma Maltz, Violaine, Kelly Donahue, Abby Ademchek, Michael Weir, and Melissa Shippey. Thank you all so much.
Yeah, we got all those extras for the Chen Pop, but here's some people who've been with us for longer. I'd like to thank Michael Mora, Lewis Walker, Adam Barnum, Claudia Davis, Chip Mims, Annette Monray, Anne Heschk, Julie Mahoney, Brian Ohm, Will Wallace, Vic L.M., Alexandria Wadsworth Bryce, Michael McGovern, Sophie Daly, Henry Berthelsen, Kenny Malone, Cecilia Nilsson, Jennifer Clark, and Dean Tisthammer. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Annika Kaiser, Jose Cordova, Raymond McDaniel, G. Alex Bartice, Hannah, Will Neville, Tone Kristen Langonet, Michelle Caswell, or Michael Caswell, ugh, boy, wow, James Varda, Zim, Kat Stromberger Perez, Tatiana V, Lori Carmichael Howell, David McGillivray, Caroline of the North, Priscilla Walton, Jenna Paul, Amy, Jackie Pawlowski, and David Matheson. Thank you all so very much.
And we're back for the storm. Joanna, what do you think about Libby? Coming back this season, right?
He didn't say this season, right?
I believe the question was we're going to see Libby more this season.
Did he say this season? Well, I mean, I think he was just saying, like, we hope to have her back generally.
Yes.
And she never comes back until the flash sideways, and that isn't really revelatory of anything. So, unfortunately, I don't, you know, like, I believe Damon when he says that. So, like, maybe Cynthia didn't want to go back. She's like, I'm sorry, excuse you.
Yeah.
you
or she was on another show, or yeah. just didn't want to, like, yeah. fly sure. out to Hawaii because she had, like, a family. Who knows? But also, so close to all Daves are one Dave, and we never get there. So close.
I mean, I still think it could be true.
Oh, I definitely think it could be true.
Oh,
it could have been canonically true. We could have met crazy boat captain Dave, who was sailing around the island, or sailing around the world, investigating rumors of the island and correcting people's lives. You know, basically like a early edition of Lost.
Early edition, the CBS show where
Coach Taylor gets the paper early. Yep.
Is it Coach Taylor?
It is Coach Taylor.
I know. I always think it's Ron Livingston, but it's Coach Taylor.
I'm pretty sure it's Coach Taylor. Here, I'm going to Google it. But
anyway, if you're unfamiliar, I'll vamp for you. If you're unfamiliar with the early edition, either Ron Livingston from Office Space or Coach Taylor got the
absolutely
paper.
Coach Taylor. Kyle Chandler.
Okay, got the. Kyle Chandler got the paper a day early, but like there was an orange cat involved, but Fisher Stevens was there. And since we're in the storm, I could say Fisher Stevens, aka Minkowski, and because he knows the news a day early, he, like Dr. Sam Beckett, tries to like stop bad things from happening before they happen.
It was definitely on reruns on a channel in New York I got without having cable. And that's how Early Edition happened to Dave.
I loved Early Edition because it felt so Quantum Leap to me. Plus, I like Fisher Stevens, so yeah.
Pretty great. Also, as we usually start the storm, the Locke antagonist check-in, we don't get to have one of these for the next couple of episodes because he doesn't show back up until the brig, but he goes out here being pretty mysterious and leaving Kate to be gassed, so not the best look. Not as bad as blowing up a sub or anything that he does in the brig, but I don't need to.
I actually think this one's worse.
You do?
Because this one's very personal. This feels personal, right? It's like he goes to tell Kate. I mean, blowing up Jack's sub, fine. We're not feeling terrible for Jack. But what did Kate do? What did Kate ever do to John where he had to go and be like, I'm leaving
what
by?
What if Ben's like, okay, listen, are we going to gas her? Yes. Will she be fine? Yes. You know? It's going to be fine.
Yeah. We're going to gas a lot of people. I'm going to gas Juliet.
Saeed's going to be... And you know Saeed's going to be fine because he's very good. So don't worry. Kate will be fine. John's like, you sure? He's like, yeah. We're going to just get gas for a little. A little gas. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Ben probably said something like, you think I had her in a bear cage on my own private island for weeks to just accidentally gas her to death?
one of my favorite shots of the episode, though, is when, like, the others are just, like, masking up. Kate's like,
something's going on here. So, yeah, John Locke, not great in terms of traditionally protagonist role in this Kate episode. And we don't get
He's an antagonist to his friends.
He's an antagonist to his friends. He could have given maybe just a little bit more information. Once again, I keep thinking about, I can't remember if it's in the actual one of the Damon Lindelof podcasts or is in one of the Patreon bonus episodes, but Damon talked to Joanna about how one of the things that he's like proud of as Lost as a show is they were able to basically create situations where the characters didn't tell each other things and make that sort of feel organic. Doesn't work the best here, but it is a very Lost thing at this point. This far into season 3, if John Locke's like, I'm not going to tell you, or if anyone's like, I'm not going to tell you, I'm like, okay, that's all of these all these characters on this island are mysteriously withholding things at this point. I just feel like they aren't withholding things because I've seen their flashbacks, but like most of these people still don't know each other from a hole in the ground after 81, 82 episodes, as Juliet points out to Kate this episode. Anyway, Lost. Still a good show.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Joy email, apparently. After I chastised everybody for not sending in emails, they were just sending in spoilery emails, but you made it this far in the episode. I apologize, Joy.
Well, it's fun. Okay, this is from Joy, and she wrote, I've been a big fan of you for all for a few years. Joanna, you are my number one podcaster with a bullet. Thank you. That was in response to the email that called me their number two favorite podcast. Yeah. Thank you, Joy. I watched Lost in real time and loved it, but hadn't gone back to watch at all since the finale. Your podcast has been a great excuse to go back to rewatch. I had mostly just been watching the episodes weekly to keep up with your podcast, but ended up binging the entire season post The Man from Tallahassee because the end of season three is so good. I just finished the finale, and my absolute favorite part was when Saeed snapped the other's neck with his legs. I was watching alone, yet immediately exclaimed, he's very good. It was wonderful. So I just felt like writing to thank you all and that wonderful mom for giving me the absolute perfect response to a great episode of TV. Love you guys. Joy. So yes. I too am very excited to watch Saeed kill someone with his legs and say, oh, he's very good.
Oh, he's very
while he does it. That's the most good thing that Saeed does. Wrong.
I don't remember the sequence as much as I remember the events. Is it like a t-shirtable one perfect shot sort of look? Like, is someone going to have to make a doodle, Saeed doodle snapping some dude's necks and then he's very good is right under it?
Maybe. Yeah. They're like in the sand. It's a little tough. And I think Saeed's handcuffed at the time, obviously, which is why he's using his legs. Or like his hands are tied behind his back or something like that. So it's a little bit of an awkward look for Naveen, but
maybe not a direct recreation of the shot. Maybe we just need chibi versions.
I mean, so basically
snapping some dude's neck.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. He basically does it with his like ankles. This is one of the most impressive kills.
People misremember it. They misremember it as him killing him with his thighs, but yeah, it's down. It's down by the feet.
It's
an ankle shot. Oh, it's still
just increases the level of difficulty.
Guess what?
There,
he's still very good.
I was sure 10 seconds ago that I might be able to kill someone with my thighs. I am 100% sure that I would not be able to kill someone with my lower legs.
That's right.
And it's like one of those like crick, like a crick. Sort of thing, you know what I mean? Like a jerking motion, right? Is my memory? Anyway, we'll watch it. So he's very good. So that's the only email I have.
Oh, nice. What was Juliet's real con then?
Oh, well, the real con is that she's working for Ben. So, like, being left behind, right? There's, like, in future episodes, she's going to be, like, communicating with Ben, and it's about, like, finding out about Sun's pregnancy and stuff like that. And so, like, when she's constant, I mean, knowing, if you know, like, what Juliet, what actually happened, which is Ben is like, Juliet, go infiltrate their camp. Then you watch Juliet pivot out of every time that Kate tries to pin her down to something, she pivots out. Like, even the stuff of, like, messing with her about Jack and all of that stuff, it's a deflection. It's, like, it's just she's constantly zagging. Mm-hmm. And so at the end, she's like, oh, I thought I'd have a better chance. They left me behind. I'm here, too. I don't know what to do. I thought I'd have a better chance. That's all a lie. It's still a lie. But you don't necessarily know that yet. So
I think that's can't make obviously a lie, Henry Gale Award.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, man. Juliet's... I mean, I like the thing where you learn from an interview that the audience liked her this way and they sort of, like, leaned into it. It's encouraging to me at so close to expose to hear that they were listening to the audience like a little bit, because expose seemed like a meal that was served up for the audience that the audience rejected just because it aired in the wrong order, I guess. I don't know.
Wait, I haven't looked this up yet, but Zach Stentz, who is a screenwriter, worked on Sarah Connor Chronicles and a bunch of other TV, follows me on Twitter. When I tweeted something about Exposé. He was like, oh, is that the episode that Damon and Carlton wrote as a joke based on a show that Don Johnson kept calling and pitching to them? So I don't know if that's true.
Oh my God, Don Johnson's Billy Dee Williams?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, Johnson, that's great. Like,
Don Johnson wanted to get the Nash Bridges gang back together and was pitching them on Exposé. So I choose to believe that that is true.
These girls, yeah. They're solving crimes, but they're undercover. That's not even a Don Johnson voice close, but it's the voice that came into my head. Been watching too much Ren and Stimpy recently. Future Cassidy, fill me in.
Oh, it's me again. Well, Kate and Cassidy, once Kate... The end of season four, this sets up the end of season four when Sawyer jumps, sacrifices himself and jumps off the helicopter. So he does not become one of the Oceanic Six, making it the Oceanic Seven or whatever. And when he does so, he whispers something to Kate, and it's a big mystery for a while. And Jack, of course, rage monster that he is all the time, is like, what'd he say to you? What'd he say? Like, did he say that? Like, what'd he say? Or whatever. But Sawyer asked Kate to take care of Clementine. And so in the, off island stuff, we will see, Kate and Cassidy spending more time together, and basically like Aaron and Clementine become like besties and inseparable and stuff like that. So like this planting a seed for that, like, future very important relationship for Kate, is a nicer payoff to some of the like crazy random coincidence of these characters being interconnected, than some of the other instances we get on Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Okay. I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
No, I like the fact that, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, how much it really works that Kate's story is not about Jack or Sawyer necessarily at the end, like toward the real end of the show. So I think that her character gets better in these last couple seasons as she This episode and then the stuff with Aaron, the off island stuff. I think, I don't know. I'm ready to be, I guess I'm holding, open the possibility of changing my mind, 'cause I haven't rewatched seasons 4, 5, and 6 yet. But I mean, Kate's one of the better, like, back half stories of Lost.
I'm interested.
It's a better use of her. It's a better use of her.
She's better in the second half of Lost than she is in the first half, which is saying a lot because she's great in the first half.
I think she's best at the beginning of season one when they were still like, what if Kate?
All right. What if Kate was the star?
Could lead. and then when she gets sort of like, when they're like, oh, everyone likes Josh Holloway, huh? Okay. So are Jack and Kate then. That's when it gets like boring. But mm-hmm. Yeah, they give her something else to do at least, once she's, Aaron's mom. And as we know, moms can't be candidates. Jacob's a sex.
Well, that's what I'm more interested in seeing when we go back to seasons 6A and 6B, is knowing that they dialed this in for Kate in a way that's so clear now, having watched the series. I want to rewatch that season with Kate is the mother in my mind and see if it leads me to Across the Sea, or if it leads me to some sort of conclusion about there being bad dads, but like the mom is somewhat like redeemable, something like that. I hope there's something in season 6A that's worthwhile. Otherwise, it's going to be a real tough little, besides the flash sideways, bit for me. But, you know, Temple and Bad Saeed, which he's very good until all of a sudden he's bad. all right. I think that's going to wrap us up. Oh, wait. I was looking up Ben's secret room that he uses to summon the smoke monster, because before, when we were talking about the sonic fence and the smoke monster, in the calm, we were like, could it also just go underground? And then while we were recording and I was still thinking about it, I'm like, also, why is there a sonic fence when like a circle of ash would like do that up into infinity, as far as we know? But then I Googled that Ben's secret room, and it doesn't actually come in through the room or the tunnels.
No.
It just gets summoned when you flush some dirty water down. So the fences are off when it comes to kill Kimi. It's just summonable. So no good answers, but lots of more clickety-clack facts.
But a very cool shot of it running into the fence.
That's right.
Yeah, it does look cool. The thing I wanted to say, but it was a spoiler, so I didn't say it, is like, because I couldn't remember if we knew when the sonar fence was built, but it was built by the Dharma Initiative, like, back in the day. So, like, the Smoke Monsters has decades to, as a raptor might test the fence, and so the idea that it's too dumb to have figured out how to go over it just doesn't work for me.
I thought about also bringing that up in the calm, and the only thing I could think about that could connect to it is we see Juliet type in part of the code, and part of them are the numbers.
It's 15, 16, 23.
And so we know that those are like Dharma numbers because they're in the hatch, but that was also kind of a leap that might have been pushing people in direction. It's unlike the others, whose leadership structure is still in flux in my brain and probably will be at the end of the season, and definitely will be once we start jumping through time. The Dharma Initiative is the run of it so clear in my mind that it's hard to talk about in the calm. But that's okay. They'll be there eventually, and then I could talk about it. Physically be in back at the Dharma Initiative. It'll be great. Or actually, no, never mind. I'm sorry. We have the man behind the curtain this season. We'll be there even sooner than I thought. So much season 3, man behind the curtain, where Locke is looking over a thing of bodies. It's going to be great. Okay. Neil, what are we doing next week?
Well, next week we are getting what everyone wants in their heart, which is a Juliet episode, One of Us. Which, if I remember correctly, a pretty good Juliet episode.
This pretty good Kate episode. I already know what our Slack channel live watch thing is going to be called because I mistakenly thought it was this week, and I was so proud of myself for what I came up with. And then I looked it up, and I was like, oh, no, it's not the Juliet episode. So I was like, I had one of those moments where I was like, don't forget this great idea, Joanna. So I'm ready. I'm ready for this week.
Nice. You going to tell us what it is?
No,
it's or
a suspense, apparently.
Is this a secret?
Surprise. This week's Slack channel was called The Iowa Job, which I thought was like a fun little, like, Tampa job. But we're in Iowa. Cassidy's here. It's fun. I'll tell you. Why not? It's a Storm exclusive.
Sure.
I'm going to call it, and then maybe you won't think it's very funny, and I'll be so sad. I came up with a good win is hard to find. Like a good man is hard to find, but a good win is hard to find.
I was going to guess, what was it? Gobble, 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 gobble.
What is that?
It's the Freaks chant, the 1932 black and white movie. One of us. One of us. Gobble, gobble, gobble.
No, it's got to be about the episode. That's where the secret is. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why nobody lets me name the Slack channel, for sure. Maybe I also don't know how to do it. It doesn't matter, because this is a podcast that I do know how to do, and that's what you're listening to right now. Until we catch up with Juliet next week, where can people find more of you guys online? Let's start this week with Neil Miller.
Well, you can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com or on Twitter at rejects, at One Perfect Shot. More importantly, that's where I've been doing most of my tweeting. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm Podcast. Vote in our polls. They're great.
And Joanna Robinson.
Oh, you find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can find me, Truth versus Hollywood, Dave Chen. That's the thing I'm doing. We're doing American Gangster this week, so where we talk about dirty cops in New York. What could be more timely? And race relations. Great stuff. So you can hear us talk about that. I actually really love that movie. It's a Denzel Washington, Russell Crowe joint, an underrated film, I think.
Ridley Scott directed that?
Yeah, Ridley Scott. Nice. Yep. So, really, if you want to stick on Hawaii theme, Russell Crowe rocks several Hawaiian shirts, in that movie as a beefy cop. So come for Russell, beefy cop Russell Crowe in Hawaiian shirts. You won't regret it.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DS70. You can also find me at the Fighting in the War Room podcast if you search wherever fine podcasts are found. And surprise, if you want to keep searching wherever fine podcasts are found, and you happen to be streaming The Legend of Korra on Nickelodeon, Joanna and I did an entire series where we did episode-by-episode reactions to all 4 seasons of The Legend of Korra. All of those are available at Republic City Dispatch. And if you happen to maybe have followed us through Game of Thrones, Joanna, Breaking Bad, all of us in our weird off-season tour, because you got together, you happened to listen to Republic City Dispatch, you should check that feed again. There is a new episode, which is the beginning of a series of special episodes. It's been like eight years since the finale of book one, and we are back to talk about book one this week.
That's so upsetting. Every time you say that, I get more upset. It's a Storm podcast origin story too, right? If Republic City Dispatch didn't exist, the Storm would not exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So you go check that out. I'm sure we have lots of opinions that we would have had 8 years old, 8 year old opinions about, you know, police and whatnot. But we're going to do some new podcasts to make up for our changes in opinions. Two of our co-hosts, Matt Patches and Vinda Harder, I have children now. Maybe that changes the perspective. Figure it out. Republic City Dispatch, Fighting in the War Room, DA70 on Twitter, and as always, me right here telling you week after week after a stormy discussion of Lost to not fall down. It's important to your health, and your health is important to me. See you later.